Blog Talk Radio.
This is Decibel from the House of Custom Maids, and I enjoy listening to the H2O Network. Much love and respect.
Hello, this is Anthony Peake and another edition of Consciousness Hour. This show is unusual in the sense that for recent months, Radia Nunes and myself have decided to not go live. So effectively, we've not had live shows and we've done things and recorded them. However, I believe this show to be of such profound importance that I'm going out live, which means effectively we're not going out with visuals. We do intend to probably re-record parts of this show in the future and upload them onto YouTube with the visuals as well, because a great deal of the information should be seen as well as heard. A little bit of background. In September 2010, I was invited to go over to Switzerland by a near-death researcher by the name of Evelyn Alassa-Valerano, who lives near Geneva. I was invited over by Evelyn because she's quite fascinated by my work, as indeed I'm quite fascinated by hers. But she invited me over because she wanted me to meet up with a couple of researchers who had developed something called the Lucid Light Device, the Lucia, which I know you guys know quite well because I've spoken about this many times in the past. And indeed, if you go onto YouTube, you'll find various shows, interviews, everything else I've done in regards to this machine. But while I was there, there was a gentleman who had been invited over by Evelyn that I didn't know, had never come across his work before. And we got chatting, and I was intrigued beyond words because his background, he was born in Croatia, he's lived in Canada, and now lives in Switzerland. And he invited myself and the group over to his studios and his home on the shores of Lake Geneva near Montreux. Beautiful location, right literally on the shores, and you overlook the mountains of France across the other side of the lake. And we got chatting there, and I started to discuss with Pierre, and the gentleman's name is Pierre Rubessa, and I started talking to Pierre about my own writings and about my hypothesis of what I call the Daemon Eidolon Dyad. And this is the idea that we have a subliminal part of ourselves that knows far more than we do. And if you've read my books, you'll know that I try to do the science of the neurology of this as to why this may be the case. It was then that Pierre took the opportunity to show me elements of his own work. And I won't deflect from that because Pierre can describe in detail, but what he showed me that day was absolutely phenomenal. I think it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life because I was feeling that I was touching on here something that was profound importance and probably was going to be of profound importance to me in the future. Little was I to know that many years later, Pierre and I would be in contact again. And not only that, but Pierre was very interested in working with me, with the two of us working together to try and bring to the world something that is astounding, and I mean literally astounding. By the end of this hour, you will be astounded as to what you're going to discover. This is not lightweight New Age nonsense. This is the real deal. We are talking here about something profoundly important, and it is to do with something Pierre calls the Octastone. But without further ado, Pierre, welcome to the Consciousness Hour.
Thank you, Anthony. It's great to be here.
Okay, wonderful to have you involved. Now, I know that there'll be many people out there who will know about your work and your career as a musician and your various other areas, but effectively there were some of them that don't. So if you can take the opportunity for about 5 or 10 minutes just to take us through who Pierre Rubessa is and what have you done in your career thus far?
Okay. In 10 minutes or less, a little introduction about myself. I grew up in Canada, and as a Canadian, we were very used to the multicultural society, first of all. I grew up in Toronto, and I began to study music at the age of 10. My mother forced me to take piano lessons, which I hated at the beginning. But as it got a little bit better, I started to enjoy playing piano, and I was in a school orchestra, and when I was 13 years old, there was one particular event that altered my the course of my life. And I remember this day very clearly. So it was about 13. It was 13 years old. It was the last 2 weeks of school. And as we had been covering music history in music class, so we went through ancient music, Baroque music, classical music, modern music. The last 2 weeks of school, we touched upon musique concrète, or electronic music. It was the first time I was consciously aware or made aware of electronic music. When I heard these sounds, as our teacher put on these records of Stockhausen, of Pierre Boulez, Edgar Varese, there was a light that lit up in my head and a voice that came and very clearly said to me, "Pierre, this is what you will do for the rest of your life." And from that day on, my fascination with electronic music, with vibrations, and with sound began. I received my first synthesizer at the age of 14, and I started to study electronic music at the Royal Conservatory of Music in Toronto. After this, I went to college, and I took audio engineering. So I was working with electronic music and using electronic instruments, not for the purposes of replacing natural instruments or trying to synthesize natural instruments, but using electronic music to work with vibration. So vibration, the understanding of vibration, the controlling a vibration has been something that has been a passion and has been a domain that I have been working with since I was 13 years old. After college, I started a recording studio in Toronto, and it was one of the first commercial studios for electronic music in Canada. So specializing only in electronic music, electronic sounds. So I was doing music for commercials, for films, recordings of artists working with electronic music. And I did this for about 10 years. Over the course of this 10 years, I continued to research the phenomena and the effects of sound, both on a physical level, but also on a perceptual level, the field of psychoacoustics. In 1988, I had signed a record contract with Virgin Records in the UK. And in 1989, I moved to London. We were just getting ready to work on our second album, and this was just the same moment that Richard Branson sold Virgin to Fujitsu. And when the new owners came in, it was quite strange because anybody who wasn't in the top 100, their contracts were canceled. And it was then that I actually realized that music had become a business. I was very disappointed by not moving forward to our second album. And as I was trying to explore my options of what to do now having left Canada and moved to Europe, I received an invitation to design a recording studio, a post-production recording studio in Belgium. So I moved to Belgium for this project. And one day, as I was picking up equipment at the Apple store, a man comes up to me and he says, "Wow, you've got 2 650-megabyte hard disks. I mean, this is enough hard drive space for the next 1,000 years. What are you going to do with this?" So as I explained to him this was for a recording studio, and we had purchased audio cards, and we had purchased video cards. He revealed to me that he was the director of marketing for Apple Computer, and it was then I was hired on the spot to be a consultant in multimedia for Apple, which I did for about 2 years in Benelux, so working in Belgium, in the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. And it was then that my professional perspective moved more from the music industry to the computer industry. I was hired in Switzerland to run the IT system of the architecture company. They did property management. They had several buildings that they managed. They had a architecture studio. They were building all sorts of buildings, multi-apartment buildings. And I was responsible for their IT department. I had connected multiple offices together between their different locations. And this was the days before internet. And in fact, I was at the very first presentation when we were introduced to something called the World Wide Web. And this was here in Yverdon at Parc Y, which is about 3 kilometers or about 1 mile from here. This was the birth of the internet as we know it today. I moved back to Canada after my project here in Switzerland, and I started a software company. We were doing multimedia development, and starting to work on the very, very first websites, the very first server applications. Then one day I received a call from a friend to ask me whether I was interested to develop a new technology. I said, of course. And I had received a very interesting technology, which is what we all use today, and this is the chip card. So I had access to the first crypto controllers, basically a computer on a card, a credit card, and I designed an electronic payment system. I was involved with electronic payments for the next 6 or 7 years. And when this system was released, which was in 1998, I was also invited by the president's office to come to Washington to make a presentation on electronic payment systems. The thing that made this system unique and different was that it was not linked with a bank. It was basically a privately run private payment system, a little bit like Bitcoin or one of these systems that we have today online. The difference here was that it used smart cards to do transactions that could be done between commerce to commerce or individual to commerce, but also it allowed electronic transactions to go person to person. And this was something very, very unique. It was basically like taking $20 from my pocket and giving it to my friend, except that this whole process would be done electronically and would be done anonymously. After my visit to Washington, this started a whole chain of events that led me to move to the United States, to Los Angeles, where I was employed by a particular gentleman to design an international electronic payment system. This opened me to a very strange world of finance and politics that we all know and love. I like to develop things. And it was then that I decided to move to Switzerland to develop a new technology, which today is known as the Bioscope and is known as the Audio Vitality Sound Treatment System. So this has now been about 13 years since I have been here, based in Switzerland, and since I have been developing a very new and unique technology that is directly related to living systems.
Wow. So I find the whole story fascinating because we didn't touch upon that side when we last met. So it was interesting to actually fill in the background as to how you ended up where you were in that beautiful location. As I said, it's absolutely wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But there is a parallel peer existence that actually has run parallel with this other experience since your childhood that actually very much explains in many, many ways why you have done what you have done and why you have been so phenomenally successful in what you have done. And this is a very interesting area of human consciousness, which people would find absolutely incredible knowing the kind of work you do. So can we move on to this now? So the other peer, the person that is guided, and exactly the mechanisms by which that has come about.
You're speaking about the subtle peer here.
Yeah, the subtle peer. I think that's a very good way of putting it. Yeah.
Well, what I just explained was a little bit background on my professional life over the last 30-odd years, where I have been involved with music, with high technology and computing, and now, well, let's say, high technology in biological systems. There is a parallel story to this. And that is a story of a young man whose life completely was altered by an accident. When I was 17 years old, I was playing in a band. So well on my way to being a professional musician. And this one particular evening, we were doing a concert. It was our biggest concert to date. And I had borrowed a big amplifier from a friend that I took to the concert hall. And as we were setting up for the show, I set up my synthesizers, I set up my organ, I set up, the band was setting up the drum kit and everything else. And I had this huge amplifier in front of me, which I was just getting ready to plug in and switch on. So I plugged it into the wall, I hit the on switch, and I just heard pop. And it was the fuse. And I thought, oh no, you know, this is like Saturday night. The doors are about to open. Who has an extra fuse? Not thinking about this in advance. Of course, nobody had a fuse. So being the inventive kind, I decided, well, I think I can make a fuse. So I took a friend's package of cigarettes and I took out the tin foil that covered the cigarettes. And I rolled the tinfoil very tightly into a little tube, a cylinder. And I took this little metallic cylinder and I placed it into the fuse box of the amplifier. Now, you know, there's a reason why equipment that we plug into the wall has fuses. And I was about to find out directly.
Absolutely.
So I switched on this amplifier, and lo and behold, all the lights went on. And I thought, you see, perfect solution. Everything works just fine. So I took my patch cord, plugged it into the amplifier, I took the other end, and as I was walking over to my synthesizer setup, I put my finger on the tip of the cable. At that point, something very particular happened. My last image was the back panel of my synthesizer. But this back panel, it was like things that we see in movies when we have freeze frames. So I saw this panel directly and discreetly getting further and further away from my field of vision in discrete steps. So, schluck, 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 schluck. It was getting further and further away. The next thing I knew, I find myself traveling in space. I'm traveling at an incredible speed. We have no reference, time reference to this. We have no human reference to this. I'm aware of myself. I'm aware of having something we could vaguely describe as a body. It was more of a luminous field than anything else. My legs, if I could call it that, my legs stretched out some 100 light years away from where I would assume my head was. And this whole luminous field was traveling through space. I was aware of every sensation. I was aware of every perception. As I looked, I could see stars. I could see galaxies. And I noticed that I was traveling in a particular direction towards a particular galaxy. As I started to approach this galaxy, still being aware that my legs were some 100 light years behind me, trailing behind me somewhere, as I approached this galaxy, this constellation started to become filled with more and more stars. The more I approached it, the more luminous it became. At one point, as I was heading towards this constellation, I realized it had the outline, a vague outline of a human body. So there was a kind of a head there and a kind of torso and something we could say were arms or legs. But in fact, it was just a dense connection of stars and galaxies in this constellation. At one point, with incredible intensity and speed, I became one with this luminous field, this luminous constellation containing millions and billions of stars and galaxies. There was a flash. And next thing I know, I open my eyes and I'm staring at the ceiling. I'm on stage laying on my back. I hear panic around me. My band members are very much in panic until one of them says, "Oh, he's opened his eyes, he's opened his eyes." Everybody rushes over and they're standing above me. I get up and I say, "Whoa, what happened?" And they say to me in a panic, "I don't know what happened, but we saw you fly over the stage and you landed on your back and we sent Mike out to call an ambulance. Are you okay? Are you okay?" I said, "Well, yes, I'm okay. Everything is fine." And I got up, looked around, dusted myself off. I found my cable laying on the ground next to me. I picked it up very carefully this time without touching the tip, and I connected it to my synthesizers. The show went on without a hitch. Everybody was happy.
Just a very quick question for you. How long were you actually away in real time? The experience you had, how long did that take in terms of the perceptions of your band members?
According to my band members, and according to the man who had been sent out to go and search for an ambulance, it would have been about 10 minutes.
Okay, please continue.
What I noticed in the days afterwards, I noticed that my whole body was tingling. It was quite unnerving because as I touched objects, I would get electrical discharge. Physically, it was a very strange sensation. But there was something else. It was also something to do with perceptions that was very bizarre. I could feel things from objects. I could feel things from people without them saying anything. I would see in a flash the life of a complete stranger walking down the street. I could see their families. I could see them as old people. It was very strange. So initially I thought that this had to do, something traumatic had happened to me during this electrocution that had somehow messed up my brain in some way or another. Now, this went on for some weeks, perhaps some months, until one night I arrived at home. I had parked the car. I went to my room. I was quite tired. I went straight to bed. And as I closed my eyes, I heard this very strange sound. The sound of a storm, of wind, of thunder in the distance. And I thought to myself, well, that's strange, because when I came home, it was a clear night. There was nothing, there was no rain in the forecast. This is kind of a strange freak storm all of a sudden. I got out of bed to look out the window. It was a clear night. I could see the stars. I saw the street lights on the street, the cars that were parked, as it was already around midnight. There were no people on the street. So I went back to bed, thinking this was a very strange thing. No sooner did I close my eyes, again, the sound, the roar of thunder and wind and storm. And, this time it was closer. This time it was more intense. I got up again, looked out the window. Same thing. I saw the stars, I saw cars parked, the street lights, nothing really going on outside. I got back into bed, closed my eyes, and again, the same thing. And this time I thought to myself, you know what, I'm tired, this is ridiculous, I think I'm going to just ignore this now. But I couldn't ignore it, because when this intensity increased to the point where I felt that the whole house was shaking, I thought to myself, wow, okay, this is really a serious storm, which is right on top of the house. I made a move to get out of bed, but I couldn't move. It was as if I was completely paralyzed. Now, different thoughts come to a person's mind at this point. One, you are aware of where you are. You're in your bed. You can't move. Number two, there is this noise, this incredible storm that is seemingly happening outside. And you really don't want to miss it because you've never heard anything like this. But you're very well aware that you cannot move. You are paralyzed. And that is a horrifying feeling. So, of course, I began to panic. And I tried to force myself to move my arms, to move my legs, to get myself out of bed. The next thing I know, there is this huge flash of light. And standing in front of me is this being, I can call it that. No, I grew up in a very traditional Christian household or Christian family, and, you know, this all played a big role when I was a child. So immediately two thoughts came into mind. On one, this is an angel, so everything my mother told me when I was a child is correct. Or secondly, of course, at the age of 17 and working with synthesizers, my favorite show was Star Trek, which, of course, I wouldn't miss at all, every week on TV. So the second thought was, this is an alien. So whichever it is, it's actually quite okay. And this panic that was around me was instantly taken away when this being said to me, it said one word. It said, peace. And instantly, my mind, my body, every cell was perfectly conscious, perfectly awake, perfectly aware of exactly what was happening, where I was, and that I was in contact with this being. He was big. I call it he, she, it, because it was difficult to say whether it was male or female or something in between. So I called it he, she, it for a long time. It was tall, a little bit blue, very brilliant. But its brilliance did not hurt the eyes if I was actually looking at it with my eyes. It was difficult to say. We had a conversation that lasted for a while, and this being told me that I need to write down everything that it was going to say to me, and that my mission, it was going to guide me on my mission. When all this was over, it went away. I bolted out of bed. I looked out the window. It was a clear night. I ran to see where my parents were in my parents' room, because I thought by now the whole neighborhood is up in arms. Everybody was asleep. My brother was asleep. I noticed that I was completely soaked. It was as if I had gone into the shower in my pajamas. I changed, and for the rest of the night, I thought about this experience. The next day, I thought, this is some sort of freak hallucination. Again, I attributed this to what had happened some weeks or months previous with the electrocution. But the thing was that this visitation, it continued. And this being would come back. It would speak to me. And I had to write down what it was, the subject of our conversations. Since that time, I have amassed over 250 notebooks with drawings, with conversations, with technical designs, with chemical formulas, with physics formulas. One day, as I was explaining this to a friend of mine who was working at the University of Toronto, she was in the genetics department, and she said to me, why don't you try to build one of these things? So I did, and it worked. And everybody was really surprised because they had never seen anything like this. And in fact, over the next 30 years, my inventions are based on these visitations and these conversations with this being. Now, at one point in time, I said to this being, you know what, if I explain this story to people, absolutely nobody will believe me. They will all think I'm absolutely nuts. And No one is going to believe this. And one day, the being said to me, this being the case, I will show you some proof, and you will receive this, and you will know when this comes into your possession. Some years later, I was visiting my cousin who was getting married, and I was walking by the sea. It was November, so at this time there were no tourists here. It was rather cold. And a woman comes to me, as if appearing out of nowhere, and places an object in my hand. She looks at me and she says to me, "This is yours. Take care of it." And she left. I looked in my hand, and in my hand is an object resembling a stone or some sort of a flat object, which I looked at very briefly because I just thought this was a very strange experience. Why would she give this to me? And I didn't think much about it for a long time. Maybe a year went by where I was fascinated by this object, but didn't think much of it, until a friend said to me, "Why don't we go down to the museum, and maybe we can go to the antiquities department, and they could tell you what this is." So I thought, hey, that's a great idea. This is good thinking. So we went to the Royal Ontario Museum, to the antiquities department. The gentleman there, I don't remember his name now, because this was quite a long time ago. He looked at the object and he said, "This is a little bit strange. Maybe you can leave it for us. If you're okay, we can do a carbon-14 test and we can do a chemical analysis." They asked me if it was okay that they break off a little piece to do the chemical analysis. I said, okay, why not? A few weeks later, I receive a phone call, and it's the museum. They invite me down for a presentation or a meeting. And I come down. There are several people in the room. And I thought, oh, okay, what's this all about? And they say to me, "Well, we analyzed your piece. First of all, none of our historians can identify what it is. So it's not Roman, it's not Greek, it's not Phoenician or Babylonian. We've looked into all this. The object has 8 sides. It's octagonal. On one side, it is flat. On the other side, it has a circle and a sort of X marking. Not a cross, it is a particular X with a very specific angle between the two lines." So they say to me, "Well, here's the result of our carbon-14, which basically it showed zeros everywhere. So carbon-14 test could not trace the age of the object." But then they said, "But here's something even more mysterious." And they showed me the chemical analysis. So there was a list with some numbers on a typed page. Carbon, 0. Silicon, 0. Oxygen, 0. Calcium, 0. They said to me, "We cannot find anything in the table of elements, in fact, that corresponds with this object." And they offered to buy the object. At the time, they offered me a ridiculous amount of money. I said, no. The object here is not for sale. It has sentimental value." this intrigued me very much. What was the subject, though? Since that time, I have tried many times to have it analyzed. I had gone to laboratories in Switzerland. I have had the object x-rayed. I have had it placed under optical microscopes. And even a few years ago, I was at the National Laboratory in the Netherlands, and we actually had a tunneling scanning microscope to try to analyze the object. And the result in each case, each and every case, was exactly the same. Number one, the machine crashed, or the film didn't expose, or the files were lost just at the moment when they hit the save button. And this was no different a few years ago at the National Laboratory. And I mean, here we're speaking about an electron microscope that costs, I don't know how many millions of euros, and we're in the Netherlands, so this is the National Laboratory that is staffed by absolute experts in the fields of spectroscopy and atomic analysis. And we had the same results there. We were able to save a number of images, which I had posted on Facebook on the Octastone page. So all the results were there.
Just for everybody's interest here as well, these pictures are now on my wall as well, so that if you want to check them up, you can actually look at them closely there as well. Okay, but Craig.
Worked with my daughters a lot. Did a lot of experiments with my daughters, with my inventions, and they have grown up to be very remarkable young women. But I would place this, for example, on the forehead of one of my daughters, and she would instantly fall asleep. Then I tried it with the other one, and she said to me, "Dad, look at all the stars!" And then, boom, she was out. In a deep, deep sleep. Pretty well anybody who has had contact with this has experienced similar types of visions. If you hold it in your hand, you feel a very definite tingling in the hand. Very peculiar feeling.
Again, I can vouch for that, because when I was at your place in Montreux, I recall you putting it in my hand, and I recall actually having a very distinct sensation. I mean, it might have been psychosomatic, it might have been because I was expecting to, but I do know I did actually feel something.
This can be tested and repeated, so nothing to do with psychosomatics here, Anthony. Pretty well anybody, even people who didn't know what this was, if we do the test, they feel something very, very particular and peculiar when they hold the object.
Interesting.
It's too bad that we don't have images right now, because I did bring the object with me here to my office.
Well, what I can do on this, Pierre, is remember when I was with you all those years ago, I actually did record a short film which shows you describing the object, and it has it in your hand and everything else as well, together with a tiny bit that was cut out a bit for the testing. And I will put that up on my wall in the next couple of days as well. But what we're planning to do is to probably re-record a non-live version of this show, where you can actually show the notebooks and maybe show us around your wonderful research facility there in terms of exactly what you have, because the notebooks themselves I found absolutely intriguing. But I'd like to go back. There's two or three things there that really fascinated me from your descriptions there, and if you can just bear with me for a few seconds, I'd just like to comment on them and then we can move back.
I
was fascinated by the way in which you were actually seeing people's long bodies, something called the Linx Aurea, the idea that you see somebody in time and through time, which intrigued me.
Yes.
But the whole thing, again, just moving on here, you may not be aware, but I work quite closely with people who lucid dream. And in fact, a whole series of guests in early 2016 will be individuals who lucid dream or have out-of-the-body experiences. And one of the known typologies of this phenomenon is the idea of the feeling of hearing sounds in the distance, mm-hmm. the sensation of shaking, which is also reported. But again, I was fascinated again by the aspects of sleep paralysis that obviously took place in your experience. And of course, this is related directly to something to do with called REM intrusion, whereby the actual body is, you are still conscious while you're in a liminal state. So you're in a hypnagogic state, but you're actually self-aware, which in my book, The Infinite Mindfield, I suggest is where we can actually travel intradimensionally. And we can actually then start to appreciate other alternate realities. Now, the very fact that your he, she, it manifests the way it did, I'm fascinated by the little bit of blue you said, because one of my associates, Graham Nichols, has something he calls the cerulean effect, which he talks about when he's in out-of-body experiences, when they are precognitive out-of-the-body experiences, there is this tinge of blue light that surrounds everything. But on top of this, for not hurting your eyes. But finally, as many of my listeners will know, in my book, The Daemon, A Guide to Your Extraordinary Secret Self, and in my later books, I describe what I call the Daemon Idol on Dyad, which is effectively our own higher self. And again, people who regularly listen to this show will know that a few weeks ago, or two or three shows ago, we interviewed a gentleman called Myron Dial. And Myron Dial's experiences virtually mirror your own, uncannily so. And Myron's manifestation, he calls Charon. And Charon, in exactly the same way, has been some kind of subliminal guide to Myron throughout his life and has been the instigation of a lot of his art and everything else. So this is intriguing and fascinating stuff. Now, what's the latest things you've been doing in terms of this? I mean, what's your plans for the future in terms of the Octostone and other things you want to be doing? Because we've got around about 10 or 11 minutes left. So what are the plans for the future now in terms of what you're wishing to do?
Well, the last message that I had received was that it's time.
Can you explain how you received the message? How does the message manifest? And when it tells you it's time, what were the circumstances and how did that come about? And just a little bit more background to that. I'd be fascinated.
Now, one of the things I didn't have time, and I don't really have time right now to get into, is that after that first experience, I became very curious about this and I started to look into the various aspects of altered states of consciousness and meditation, the shamanic experiences. So there's a long history behind on this, looking at different cultures, Christian mysticism, Islamic mysticism, Jewish mysticism, etc., just to try to find some parallels to the experience, trying to find some parallels to these experiences. So on the one side, there's a very rational part of me that has been trying to over the years to understand this and to decode this. And at the same time, you know, I have actual devices, I have actual machines, electronic circuits that, as of yet, none of the experts who have seen this can explain to me why this is working. However, it is working. You know, the Bioscope is one such device. Audio Vitality is another such device. So, you know, we've had many, many experts in the fields of science to try to explain this, and as of yet, there are suppositions, but nobody has been able to clearly say to me this phenomenon is related to this physical principle, or it's related to this biological function, or to this chemical reaction. Nobody has been able to identify this as of yet.
Well, can I mention here, when we had our conversation a couple of weeks ago, you were mentioning about the issue with the eggs. Are you in a position to talk about that, or is that something that's secret at the moment?
All I can say about that, so let me just first of all say this: we're tracing this back to the "It's Time" message. The message is related to life and to living systems, and we as humans are living systems, and plants are living systems, and animals are living systems, and we are in a very precarious time right now in our existence. All we need to do is like just simply look around us in terms of the environment, in terms of our political and social strife that's going on, not in only in the U.S., but all over the world. It's everywhere. It's the same thing. There is something coming. There is something really big coming. There is something very important coming. And the key for me, and based on what I have received, it's related to a new understanding, a new insight to life. For me, the bioscope is a kind of microscope that allows us to observe an aspect of living systems that up until now has not been directly observable. They have been observed, they have been sensed, they have been perceived through trance, through shamanic practice, through meditation. But no one has been able to come into a laboratory and repeat this experiment or this experience under controlled conditions. The bioscope allows us to do this. The bioscope allows us to look at what happens in a plant when we approach it with a flame. It allows us to observe what happens in a glass of water when we open our eyes and project our attention, our conscious attention, to this glass of water. I have posted images of these experiments on Facebook, again on the bioscope page.
So going back to when you said that he, she, it, or the entity, had come to you to say that now was the time, can you, I rather cut in on you there, and I rather ruined your flow, my apologies about that, because I'm very interested into saying, you know, what, how that came about, and exactly where you're going now, because we're now down to 5 minutes, so it's quite important to get the final points across now. It would be really good if you could.
So these visitations come, I cannot control them. Either they come or they don't come. It's seemingly at random. I do have a sort of a precognition to this because there is a very specific feeling, physical feeling in the body. And then when this happens, it's like the famous Mr. Spock mind meld, where thoughts and experiences are directly transferred into the mind from one entity to another. And we're not only speaking about language, but we're speaking about images and feelings and details. And when he, she, it shows me how things work, I can become part of the machine. I enter the machine. I become the circuitry. And I understand in a... Very often I'm just trying to explain this after the fact or write this down after the fact, and it's very, very difficult because the intensity and the detail of this experience goes beyond what we can express in human language. Or so this is why I've developed a sort of a shorthand form where I use a lot of images and symbols in the writings. Simply because they convey these thoughts, these experiences, in a way that just gives me back the memory of this. So this happened some months ago, and the message was very clear. So the message was very clear, and it was time. It's time to release the bioscope. It's time to put a new vibration into the world. And I hope to be able to speak with you more about this at a later date.
Well, it's one of these things that I know that you and I are very, very keen to work together on this, because I feel rather like yourself that there's a great deal of synergy in what I'm doing. And I find it quite curious that the things you're describing now, I have been writing about, are actually manifesting now and coming together in the most phenomenal way. And when you contacted me a few weeks ago about this working together, I was indeed deeply honored in the first place that you were interested in actually involving me. But I was even more delighted because your work has fascinated me ever since I met you that time. And I think your work, I meet a lot of people and I interview a lot of people, but I think what you have is really quite powerful. And it's you as a person, but it's also your ideas. I know I used the term a modern-day Tesla to you a couple of days ago, but I genuinely believe after spending some time over in Zagreb and seeing some of the work that Tesla did over there and going to the Tesla Museum, I think the time is right for a change. And I agree with you totally. I think there is a build-up of some form of energy, of something, and I think that we are at the leading edge of this. Now, that's not meant to sound vain, because I know you're not a vain man and neither am I. You know, this is a genuinely concern about humanity and the way we're going. And I believe that there's a group of people coming together now that fate is pulling together in some way, because something has to be done and something does have to be done. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. Right, sort of final point now. We're down to 2 minutes. If you'd like to make 90 seconds, in fact. So, Pierre, if you'd like to let everybody know how they can contact you and your details before the end of the show, it'd be really great.
You may contact Facebook or via my website. It's www.pierrerubessa.ch. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Dia. Thank you, everybody. And hope to speak with you soon. Bye.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, everybody else, for listening in to this new era of live shows. And I just to say thank you. And if anybody's interested, the next show will be in early January, where my guest will be Rory McSweeney, Dr. Rory McSweeney, who is a lucid dreamer and an out-of-body experiencer, another fascinating guest for the Consciousness Hour. Thank you very much, Pierre. I'm delighted and honored that you've been involved in the show tonight. And I'm looking forward to working with you in the future.
Bye.
Bye.